Coming up on Tech News Today, what we really think of Sony's PS4, some facts about the Apple Watch, and some not so much facts but speculation about touchscreen Chromebooks. All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today for Thursday, February 21st, 2013. Tech News Today is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create a professional website, blog, portfolio, and now an online store. Check out their new commerce solution so you can start selling stuff immediately. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, go to squarespace.com and use offer code TNT2. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Aya Zakhtar.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And this is the show where we keep you up to date on the most important stories in the tech world, starting each time with the top 10 stories of the day in the News Fuse. A lot to tell you in this first News Fuse, so hang in there. Sony took the stage Wednesday evening in New York for a two-hour reading of a press release between game trailers. The Sony PS4 will run an 8-core AMD Jaguar processor, Radeon 1.84 teraflops GPU, and come with 8 gigabytes of GDDR5 memory, a hard disk of some sort, and a 6X Blu-ray drive, among other things. Sony showed a new DualShock controller with a touchscreen and a share button. New games include Killzone Shadow Fail, Infamous Second Son, Watch Dogs, and Blizzard's Diablo 3. You can also use your PS Vita, iOS, or Android phones with the machine and possibly recreate an old man's head from Square Enix. After the announcement, Sony Worldwide Studios boss Shuhei Yoshida told Eurogamer, used games can play on PS4. How is that? Sony did not show the console, give pricing information, but they did say it would be available holiday 2013.
Kind of a long announcement to not actually see anything. The New York Times reports that Google is working on a deal with Warby Parker to help Google design more fashionable frames for its Project Glass glasses. Warby Parker only conducts sales online and offers a system that allows customers to virtually try on glasses. Yeah,
Warby Parker makes a monocle. I can't wait till they make that together. The Wall Street Journal reports that Google will release a touchscreen notebook running Chrome OS this year. The journal doesn't have an exact date, nor did it know which company would make the laptop. So once again, get excited, but vaguely excited.
I am so vaguely excited. Apple Insider folks discovered an Apple patent today, Thursday, which backs up the idea of Apple working on a watch. The bistable spring with flexible display was filed in August 2011 and describes a wearable wrist device that uses Bluetooth or Wi-Fi to show info from another device on a flexible display that wraps around your wrist. It's essentially a flexible display on a snap bracelet. Patents don't always turn into products, of course, but this gives a little more weight to those Apple wristwatch rumors.
Nielsen is to change its definition of what constitutes television viewing ratings, so says The Hollywood Reporter. So streaming services like Netflix and Amazon Instant Video and content viewed on set-top boxes and game consoles would now be included in Nielsen's ratings. A committee made up of representatives from TV networks and advertisers reportedly agreed to the changes at a meeting in New York on Tuesday.
The FCC has enacted new rules that govern the sales of wireless signal boosters that are used to improve cell phone signals. There are already 2 million signal boosters in use in the United States. If you already own one, the FCC says you'll need your wireless provider's permission to use the booster, and you must register the booster with your provider. Wireless carriers have yet to mention how to register your devices.
Billboard's famous top 40 charts used to be created based on record sales and radio airplay. But over the years, the publication has added digital sales, streaming music to the mix. And yesterday, Billboard announced YouTube streams will count as well. It seems to have had an effect. Harlem Shake by Bauer debuted at number one this week.
A petition to make cell phone unlocking legal has received the requisite 100,000 signatures to require a response from the White House, official one. Back on January 26th, a DMCA exemption made by the Librarian of Congress expired. Unlocking a phone is currently a violation of the DMCA without permission of your carrier.
Canon's getting into virtual reality, sort of. PC Mag reports on M-Real. It's a mixed reality system, which combines a head-mounted display and various sensors and markers. Canon showed off the system Wednesday night in New York. The system combines images from the real world with virtual images. For example, plopping a dinosaur on a real shelf in front of you, letting you sit down in a virtual car on a real chair. Canon is targeting businesses with a starting price of $125,000 plus $25,000 annual maintenance fee.
No pocket change. We've
vaguely
been
excited.
We've been building to the biggest story of the day because NVIDIA is making a building that has stories. NVIDIA has unveiled plans for its new headquarters, which will be located in Santa Clara. The complex will be made up of two triangular buildings with an eco-friendly design. NVIDIA hasn't mentioned when it'll be ready to move into its new digs.
You built me up for something, and I'm vaguely excited about it. This episode brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create a professional website, create your blog, your portfolio, and now sell stuff in an online store. Squarespace introducing a new commerce solution that lets you instantly create a store and start selling products. Squarespace Commerce provides powerful and flexible e-commerce, so it's integrated to work with every Squarespace template. It allows sales for both physical and digital goods. You can sell music CDs, or you can sell MP3s, or you can sell both. You can sell hardcover books. You can sell ebooks. Fast merchant account setup so you can accept payments right away, credit or debit cards. You got one interface for order management, tracking orders, providing customer email updates, printing shipping labels, and adding coupons. It's all in there. Squarespace Commerce is included with a business plan subscription. Those run about $24 a month if you sign up for the whole year at once. They're $30 a month if you go month to month. Squarespace gives you and your website the best mobile experience still, even with that store. They haven't changed anything else. It's still the best mobile-ready responsive design you can get. It translates your images into 7 versions. Fast and easy to use. Great social media integration. Squarespace is an all-in-one platform integrating all your website needs, domains, design, development, commerce, hosting, 24/7 customer support, all in one place. But you don't have to listen to me go on and on about it. Go try it for free. You get a free account. You don't need a credit card. Just try it out. Start building your website. Then, if you decide to purchase it, use the offer code TNT2. That gets you 10% off your first purchase on new accounts. If you buy an annual plan, you get 10% off the entire year. And don't forget, free domain registration when you buy an annual plan subscription. That's squarespace.com. Use that offer code TNT2. Everything you need to create an exceptional website. And we thank them for their continuing support of Tech News Today. Joining us now to discuss the stories of the day, especially the PS4 stories, from Polygon.com, features editor and founder, Russ Pitts. How's it going, Russ?
Co-founder. Good. How are you doing, Tom?
I will put a co in there. My apologies to your co
well, there's a lot
other
of founders.
Founders.
So, you
yeah,
know,
yeah.
It gets
yeah,
nasty.
Good team.
A lot of fighting. There's knives.
Ah, cool. Well, it's great to have you, man, especially with this PS4 announcement. Now, I'm not going to go through all those specs again that we talked about in the news fuse. I was pretty excited about the idea of Blizzard working with them. Diablo 3, maybe not the greatest thing, but it's a good start to see them coming back to consoles. But what did you think of this 2-hour-plus-long announcement that, in the end, only showed us the controller?
Yeah, I mean, if you're announcing a video game console, you could do worse than having Activision Blizzard and Bungie on stage with you. So, I mean, whether or not those entries end up being anything worth talking about, that was a wise move. I got to be honest with you, I came into this press event feeling fairly cynical about the PS4. Shockingly, the PS3 rollout was full of half truths, misdirection. The final product ended up not being even really close to what they talked about. And that could end up being the case here. But from everything that they talked about, obviously they didn't show it. And that's something they can't get around. I mean, that's bad. But for everything that they talked about, it sounds like they really listened to a lot of the criticisms about the PS3. I mean, everything they talked about sounded like a laundry list of criticisms of the PS3 and ways that they plan to address that and fix those. And I think it's a good thing. I mean, we're already seeing the big thing on the PS3 that was a major failure for them was how complex it was and how hard it was to develop games for it, to the point where a lot of developers ended up not even wanting to develop games for it, which is kind of a bad thing. Already today, we saw a tweet today from John Carmack from id. He says they've made some wise engineering choices. I think, you know, the number one thing they're trying to do is get developers on board with this console to develop great games for them. And I think that could be a win.
And that's a really interesting theory. I hadn't thought of that. The idea of them making this announcement before E3 makes me wonder what's going on. Why are they making this announcement then now? And obviously they're going to show us the console at E3. But that makes some sense. If this was a developer play, this was them speaking directly to developers saying, hey, this is about games. This is our platform. It's going to be easier to develop on. Because what stuck out to me was the fact that while the Xbox is out there touting its media center capabilities, like we are here to provide everything you need in your living room, Sony said, we're not about the living room, we're about gamers. And for somebody like you, Sarah, you're probably less excited about the video games than you are about the services, whether you can get all of the different video, Netflix, correct, streaming, et cetera. Does this mean that you're more excited about the Xbox now than Sony's PlayStation 4?
Yeah, I mean, if they don't want to bundle it into the other stuff that I'm interested in, and they say it's not about the living room, I'm not exactly sure. What does that mean? Gamers don't like living rooms? It's kind of just a weird marketing spin, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, I mean, in the actual presentation, they didn't emphasize the media capabilities, but they did have like one or two slides of Netflix and Amazon and everybody else. So they'll still have all that. But I mean, I was actually somewhat impressed by this long, far too long presentation. When we had Nintendo's Wii U introduction, we're like, here's the hardware. Nobody seems to understand what to do with it. Sony did something crazy. They're like, hey, look, we're going to have games, not just sequels, but games. We're also going to have this share function, which I think is a little strange, but apparently people like doing that when it comes to video games. But I mean, I don't know what the big hang-up is on not seeing the actual final design of the hardware. It's like, okay, that's going to change from here on till like the holiday season when it comes out. I think that by actually focusing on games and saying, look, we can do this now. We're going to have real power. We're going to actually have something to deliver. I think I'm way more excited about this than the Wii U was when that was first introduced, because they're just holding off Nintendo right now and making the Vita actually useful with that remote play feature that's going to be working with the PS4. That just killed the Wii U. I'm just going to say that right now. The Wii U's got no function after that remote play.
Now, the other thing that came out this morning, Sony president of Worldwide Studios, Shuhei Yoshida, told Joystick that the PlayStation 4 will play video recorded in 4K, although games currently are not being made for it in 4K. So that would imply that maybe there'll be some kind of 4K video service available at this. Russ, do you think we'll hear more about the non-gaming applications at E3?
Absolutely. And this announcement today, this was for the core gamer, pure and simple. I mean, no one is going to be paying attention to a console if they don't actually see the console, except the core gamer and the game press and the game developers. I mean, they're aiming for an E3 where they can roll out a lot more capabilities for this system and a lot more uses for it. I think, living room integration, even though they said it's not about the living room, it's about, all the other ways gamers play games and interact with this device. That tells you right there they're aiming for, with this device, I think they're aiming for competing with the eventual Steam Box, with the sharing, with the multicasting, with all of your integration of social tech with your core gaming and a PC-based architecture. That tells you right there who they feel their major competition is going to be in this console generation. I think once we get closer to E3 and we have an actual device that we can look at and hold in our hands, then you're going to see them reaching out to more of a mainstream consumer.
I can definitely see them at E3 going, it's not about the living room, it's about every room, or even rooms right. You're visiting with your PS Vita. All right, let's move on to that patent filing that Apple Insider dug up. Sarah, what more can we learn from poring over this?
Well, it's impossible to know exactly for sure if Apple is going to come out with some iWatch later this year. But we do know that the first application for a patent for a bistable spring with flexible display, which sort of roughly translates to, sort of a snap-on watch, was filed back in August of 2011. And the details, if you read it, it's a wearable accessory device for your wrist or another body part, but made for the wrist. Connects to portable device via Bluetooth or Wi-Fi, or has the capability to. Anyway, displays info on a flexible display that can fully wrap around an appendage, but that's sort of code for wrist. They said appendage, not me. I am merely trying to state the facts. And then it compares to how a watch would fit around a wrist with a slap bracelet. You've got layered flexible steel bands sealed with the fabric cover. The electronic parts are covered and mounted on one end. So when you're wearing the watch, if all goes well, then nothing that is too delicate would be exposed to the elements. And then it's there are switches and electronics that should also be resistant to fatigue. That's what the patent notes. Obviously, the bracelet would be switching from a convex shape to a concave configuration, at least somewhat regularly. So, of course, you go, okay, well, wireless, that's great. Supposedly, it would also have the ability to be wired if you wanted to sync or charge the battery, that sort of thing. But what's interesting about this is, again, this shows definitely that Apple has been interested in this technology for a few years. I mean, they went from concept to filing, and you know, now we're into 2013. But Apple has more patents that are sort of related to this. They have a manufacturing process for curved glass. They have a solar cell multi-touch panel patent, a shake-to-charge kinetic energy technology patent. And then there, of course, if you think about the idea of solar panels, that's really cool. If you've got solar panels and kinetic energy, that would be included on the bracelet to help conserve battery life. I love that idea. That's one of the things I don't like about some of the other wearable technology devices, that the batteries are pretty good, and they're good to the point that I forget to charge them every 3 days or so, and then that becomes sort of cumbersome. Russ, did you get excited about this? Is this something that you want to see from Apple?
Yeah, I think it's great. I love my smartphone, and I find that I'm not even wearing a watch anymore. Now that I have it, I can pull it out of my pocket. I can see what time it is. But using it, being that sort of close to it on a daily basis, I'm also that close to all the other things that it does. So I don't necessarily want to know every time I get an email or even every time I get a phone call. I don't necessarily want to have to pull that thing out of my pocket. It'd be so nice to have that extra display. And I'm thinking beyond that, how cool would it be to have that display on your wrist with your Google Glasses or whatever that technology ends up being. And to have that sort of multiple methods of interaction with this very powerful computer in your pocket. I mean, that's just, I don't know, I get really excited about that.
Obviously, Apple cares a lot about design. Tom, when you read about how some of the configurations of these watches or whatever they end up being called are configured, do you worry that they'd be too flimsy?
No, ever since we saw the thing with Gorilla Glass at CES and the fact that they have a pretty decent flexible display, I haven't been worried too much about that, but I've been wondering what this supposed, like, Apple has cracked a way to form it to your wrist. Snap bracelet makes perfect sense. That's what everybody's talking about when they say that. Apple hasn't, invented a new way of wearing something, but they've figured out how to bond that Gorilla Glass display to a snap bracelet-like device. And that's the kind of nifty thing that Apple's good at presenting, right? You're going to get up on stage, you're going to see Tim Cook or somebody else snap that thing on, and then all of a sudden be able to see your photos and your music and all that stuff. It's going to be really impressive. I just don't know that I would use it. I think I'm different than Russ in that way, in that I'm not looking for more ways to access that stuff. And I don't know, just having something on my wrist doesn't seem essential to me. I can definitely understand why it would be for others, though.
Ayaz, what do you think?
I'm a big smartwatch fan when it comes to these things. I mean, this patent filing is great, but I mean, Apple's got tons of patents that they don't really do much with. They have this really cool one where you could have little cameras behind each pixel of your screen, so when you're looking at it, it's a camera. They had patents on docking an iPod into your computer and making it your portable system all the time. You could always dock this. The fact that they have patents on this, I don't know if they're actually going to develop anything. The idea that they could come up with a flexible display that would be able to be snapped to people's wrists seems really cool. I don't know if they're I don't know how close they are to making that thing a reality, because that seems like a complex technology. Even though there are flexible displays out there, you still got batteries in there that makes it a little bit more inflexible. You've got to have a lot of flexible components, and I don't know if you can fit that into something that is for the consumer right now, maybe the next 2 to 3 years, but not yet.
Wall Street Journal reporting Google developing some touch-based Chromebooks. We're seeing Chromebook creeping slowly into the marketplace, aren't we, Ayaz?
Right. So we got the journal report of Google saying that, not Google saying, sorry, the Wall Street Journal is reporting that Google's developed its first touchscreen Chromebooks. It's going to go on sale later this year. And like I said before, Wall Street Journal doesn't know when the notebooks will go on sale, nor did it know which manufacturers would build the machines. Right now, though, there is Lenovo, HP, Acer, and Samsung. They all make Chromebooks. Now, earlier in February, a video floated around the internet of something called the Chromebook Pixel. The video was made by an agency called Slinky, and the ad showed off a high-resolution Chromebook with a touchscreen. Now, it wasn't known whether it was a hoax, it's a product, if it's a leak. Nobody really knows what's going on with the Pixel and if that would be this touchscreen Chromebook. Tom, you've seen the Chrome OS. Does a touchscreen make sense for that operating system? It just seems not touch first.
I kind of agree with you that I still don't really want to touch my laptop screen, but lots of people do, and everybody's doing this. Everybody's trying to figure out how to put a touchscreen in a laptop, and I'll admit, even though I say I don't want to do that, every once in a while, I do find myself reaching out going, it would be nice to be able to just swipe that right now. And using the Microsoft Surface, I have seen the interaction where it's like, oh, it is kind of nice every once in a while to be able to just swipe something. And even though you're typing and using the mouse interface most of the time. So I don't think it's a bad idea. Again, it all depends on functionality and price.
Russ, do you think it makes any sense for a Chrome OS to exist with Android with a touchscreen? I mean, it seems like Android's built for touch. Why would you put touchscreen on a Chrome OS book or Chromebook?
Yeah, I mean, I have a hard time getting my head around it, but obviously there's a demand for that kind of competition. I know the race for what will eventually be the smart terminal, working through the cloud is still on. And I think these more or less dumb notebooks / tablet, noteblit, lablet things are... that's the future. Tab tops. I mean, that's the future. It's hard to deny that. The problem I have with touchscreen on a laptop is that I have tried to use my tablet as a laptop as a writing device, and I don't know if it's the touchscreen technology is not good enough or my fingers are too fat, but I can never quite get the cursor where I need it to be to do writing and editing tasks. So also they get really, really dirty. So I'm not sure if I would ever go to that solution as my first choice or my everyday choice. But that's, it's clearly the way the market's headed.
Sarah, the Samsung and Acer books are like under $250. It's $199 and $249.
Right.
Wouldn't a touchscreen drive these costs up? And I mean, a Chromebook isn't like super powerful such that you're like, oh, I'm going to pay a premium for a touchscreen.
Yeah. I agree that you can't have the prices go up too much or the whole thing just looks a lot less attractive. I don't really think that having a dirty laptop screen, I mean, anybody who has a tablet knows that those things are just smudgy all the time. I mean, it's almost impossible to keep it pristine. I like the idea of this. I actually think it makes sense, especially because Chrome is designed to be simple. You know, what do you want to do? Yeah, I want to do that. Okay, I get into email, but I've got a keyboard already attached to it, so I'm not necessarily using my hand. Like, it's the hybrid nature of it, to me, makes it seem like it's less cumbersome than using a tablet to try to use it as your main computer. Russ, as you mentioned, that can be cumbersome because you've got the laptop already involved. And it's sort of the way of the future because people sort of like the touchscreen aspect. And let's be honest, we're all touching our laptop screens half the time anyway because we're confused. I think it's a good idea.
You know, it wouldn't surprise me if this is just pretty much like Acer and Samsung, all these companies that are already using touchscreens in their devices for Windows 8 because a lot of laptops are coming with that as an Ultrabooks. So why not go, okay, look, we've already got the parts. Why not just push it out? Because they're probably getting at a lower cost. It might be a higher price than a traditional screen, but I'm just figuring this is repurposed hardware. Because for the most part, you could take a Chromebook and put Windows on it if you want to. Usually a bad idea. But the thing is, I'm thinking it's just repurposing parts. And it's just, this is the future of laptops. You gotta have that one feature, another checkbox feature. I don't know if it's going to be compelling. I don't want to touch the URL bar when I can use a mouse because that's very precise. And Chrome isn't built for large targets. It's built for tiny targets like the web. So I'm not sure how that's going to work out.
Well, and Chrome's evolving, right? Chrome wasn't built in a day, so they're going to always be adding in new features. And this is how they slowly evolve. And maybe it is the bridge to a Chrome tablet somehow. There's an interesting story that's getting a lot of votes on our subreddit. PCGuy8088 submitted a post from Home Media Magazine titled, "Nearly a quarter of Netflix subscribers cancel pay TV service." Now, that would be huge news because cable television has been saying, we're seeing a few declines here and there, but it's all economic related. And Netflix, Reed Hastings himself, has been saying, we are not in competition. We are not encouraging cord cutting. We're like baseball and football. You can like both. We appeal to the same audience, but they're not mutually exclusive. This survey comes from financial service firm Cohen & Company. They surveyed 1,229 people, found that 23% of the Netflix subscribers they surveyed canceled premium TV service. Now, that would be 6.5 million if it was applied to the entire population, right? However, in 1,229, only 569 respondents had access to Netflix, or at least admitted they did, and 346 of those paid to get it. So if 23% of those 346 canceled premium TV services because of Netflix, that's 80 people. there is a way that 80 people can be perfectly representative, and this would be statistically significant, but I'm not certain, and I couldn't find any evidence that that is the case, that this is representative enough to have enough, a narrow enough margin of error for that to be representative. A lot of people are laying into Cohen & Company for this. 86% of Netflix subscribers surveyed did say that having access to watch House of Cards made them less likely to cancel their subscriptions. Again, you're not talking, you're talking about 300 some people here, 346 people. So 86% is big enough that that probably is having a positive effect. So that's good news for Netflix. And 10% viewed at least one episode of House of Cards in the first 12 days. Average person watched six episodes, and 19.4% watched all 13. A lot of folks are thinking, well, maybe Cohen Company is just going to go and like upgrade their recommendation to buy Netflix stock. And this is a self-serving survey. Other people are saying, yeah, even though it's small, it's, you know, should be considered significant. Even if it's not 25%, it is a large percentage of the people surveyed. Russ, what do you think when you look at this? Do you just think this is survey flim-flammery?
Well, yeah, I mean, to a certain extent, it has to be, you know, self-serving sort of statistical analysis. But I think the reason these stories stick in our heads is that they either have a kernel of truth or we want them to, right? I think there's a lot of passion, particularly among a younger generation and internet, you know, savvy consumers, to see this kind of success story, to see Netflix supplant, you know, the larger networks, which make some really dumb programming decisions. And are making more and more dumb programming decisions, the more a market share they lose. Netflix is a really attractive way to consume television. I think a lot of people love it, want to see it succeed. Whether or not that means this has any bearing on truth, I can tell you from my perspective, I would cancel my premium subscription if a few things were easier to find. And House of Cards did make me more likely to keep Netflix. So I know it applies to me.
Ayaz, you got any thoughts on this? Because I know you're a cord cutter like Sarah, right?
Yeah, for the most part, I am a cord cutter when it comes to this. But see, the thing is, it's actually cheaper for me to have basic cable and internet than just internet alone. So I do have basic cable, which is not hooked up. I have the box in a closet because I just don't even care to use it. The reason why I use Netflix over these things is because it's effectively a multi-room DVR for everything. So instead of having to have a separate box, making sure it's networked properly, it's like, no, Netflix has got this taken care of for me. It's already done in whatever quality I want it. Streaming is going to be available. I can choose what I want to watch. I mean, I can see a lot of people doing a similar thing. The fact is, Netflix is so cheap at $8 a month to get all of these things available. I mean, the fact that licenses expire is annoying, and you're like, oh, no, I'm going to lose a show eventually. But that happens on television anyway. On-demand goes away. I think that a lot of people are just thinking, look, $8 versus another cable package, another DVR, another box, another fee per month. It's way cheaper to go with Netflix than to get a second DVR.
Even if this number is inflated, Sarah, do you think that this is indicative of the direction things are going?
Well, I mean, it sounds like me. I know that a lot of people don't agree that we should be watching less TV in order to be better people. But I mean, I like the idea of limiting myself, because otherwise I'm going to sit there all day and I'm going to watch a bunch of garbage that is not helping me in any way. So it's I have to assume that there are people who say, you know, I like the stuff that Netflix offers. I really don't need my cable package. As you're in sort of a weird, unfortunate position where you have to have a cable package in order to have cheaper internet. But I think for a lot of people, you know, if you just have the internet alone and some other cord cutting solution, you can make it work. And really, I find for me, and I know some people have got to agree with me, that less is fine. It really is. It's sort of about saving money, but it's also about saving time.
The less choice,
I find myself,
better.
Yeah. I find myself not wanting to watch broadcast TV, even though we still have the one DirecTV box in the main room, because it's harder. I have to fast forward the commercials. I have to find when something started. And with Netflix and Roku and Hulu, I just go to the thing I want to watch and press play.
Yeah, I still am like, I don't really know when some of my favorite shows on NBC and Fox air live. I could watch them live, but I just find them on Hulu a couple of days later. It's fine.
Let's give some fashion advice to Sergey Brin. He's walking around with those Google glasses on all the time. Is there anyone out there that can help him, Sarah?
Yeah, not cool enough, Sergey. I'm all about the wearable tech today. The New York Times is reporting that Google is in negotiations with Warby Parker. We mentioned in the news views, this is sort of an online eyeglasses company, to help it design more fashionable frames. This is according to two people briefed on the negotiations who aren't allowed to speak publicly because this is not an official partnership. And for what it's worth, Google and Warby Parker both declined to comment to the Times. But I think this is actually a very interesting potential partnership, not just Google and, you know, a company that makes cool glasses like Google and Ray-Ban. Okay, whatever. Google and Warby Parker specifically is really interesting to me because Warby Parker does a buy a pair of glasses, give a pair of glasses type of a thing. Their founder used to be involved with a particular nonprofit how do I explain this? So the nonprofit would go to a developing country and help low-income entrepreneurs sell glasses, be allowed to build a glasses shop and have people come in who need prescriptions and test their eyes and give out basically very inexpensive glasses to people who need them. Because, you know, whether you have a lot of money or not any money at all, if you can't see anything, it can be really debilitating. Warby Parker raised a $38 million round of funding back in September 2012. So that's a Series B. So they've got quite a bit of money. And what's neat about the company, and, you know, we should mention that they're actually going to be a future sponsor of Twit, so that's very exciting to me because they're nice glasses. But nice glasses, as many of us know, you know, you go into like a sunglass hut or something, you want a pair of really nice sunglasses or prescription glasses. Don't even get me started on that. You're paying hundreds of dollars for these sorts of things, you know, for nice glass. Warby Parker gets all their frames down to $95. So I like the idea. I mean, this might be just wishful thinking on my part, but if Google and Warby were to partner up, make nice glasses so the Google glasses look awesome, and somehow be giving back to developing communities in the process, wouldn't that be the perfect don't be evil type thing for Google? Is this just like pie in the sky dream here?
The one glasses wearer on the show. I mean, I could see Google doing that kind of philanthropy, making sure that they're setting up a business deal with a company that's going to help other people have vision. I'm looking at the Warby Parker site and seeing their glasses. I mean, I could imagine it just being a little checkbox add-on for whatever style they already have, and it's pre-fitted and all those things. The idea that they have home try-on, I think, is kind of a brilliant idea. So that way, if Google didn't go with a store approach, a retail store approach, they could say, look, we'll mail you the glasses through this company. You can try them on and send them back without there being a lot of trouble. And that way, Google also doesn't have to do any of that customer service stuff they're not exactly known for just yet. I'm assuming with the partnership, if they did go ahead with Warby Parker, there's a good chance that they'll have a lot of positive associations with this company, with their home try-on and the philanthropy aspect.
I think maybe it would be cool if they actually gave, like, if enough people buy these and they do the buy a pair, give a pair thing still with Google. Can you imagine places all over the world just having Google glasses? That'd be fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know exactly how that works financially for Google. But
they take all the $1,500 fees they're charging all the developers and creative types right now, and then they just fund it.
I guess so. Yeah, I guess so. Speaking of that, I mean, I've had a lot of people on Twitter if I had Google Glass hashtagging. Everybody wants them. I'm like, you know, you have to pay $1,500 if they choose you, right?
Yeah, I know. It's like, I won.
Yeah.
Let's finish up with what I think is probably a watershed moment as far as this cord-cutting stuff we were talking about earlier. Nielsen agreeing to change ratings to include streaming.
Well, as Sarah mentioned in the news views, the Hollywood Reporter's saying that Nielsen's going to expand its definition of television to include all video viewing, including Xbox and iPads. They held a meeting of, this is the great, great committee name, What Nielsen Measures Committee on Tuesday, and the committee is made up of representatives from major TV networks, local TV stations, cable TV, advertising agencies, and big brand advertisers. And the networks apparently are the most excited about expanding the definition. One problem, though, the decisions made by this committee, they're not binding necessarily to Nielsen, so they're going to take it as a recommendation. For timing, though, the Hollywood Reporter was really specific about this. By September 2013, Nielsen expects to have new hardware and software tools in 23,000 television homes. Nielsen is also said to have an internal goal of being able to measure video viewing on an iPad by the end of this year. Tom, do you think a revised Nielsen system is going to change the way networks put out their content? Because right now, there's like a delay, like a one-day delay or two-day delay. Will this change anything?
Absolutely. Absolutely will change it. I don't know whether it'll change the delay particularly or what it will change. But right now, the impetus to put things online is to get a very small slice of a different pie, right? I have to sell different ads online. Online ads are undervalued right now. People don't want to pay as much for them. It's safer to buy TV still. If Nielsen can say, oh, you're watching this from your laptop, fine. It counts in the ratings. And if television can then go to their advertisers and say, when you buy an ad on, you know, CSI, you're going to get that ad view all across all devices. Suddenly, they're raking in money off of the internet. And they have at least, if not a motivation to get shows on the internet, no more reason to prevent shows from going to the internet.
Russ, do you think people are going to have like privacy concerns? They're going to freak out if they become chosen by Nielsen to be an iPad subscriber when somebody actually gives the data?
I don't think so. I think what you have seen with Nielsen in the past is that people actually feel honored and thrilled to be a part of that. And people inherently want their opinion to be known and heard. I think you'll have lots of people signing up for this willy-nilly, unless it's sort of Big Brother-ish where you can't control how your data is collected and they do it without your asking, which I don't see Nielsen doing. It's not their forte. I think this is just huge for the major networks. They've been taking it in the teeth from time shifting and from online content. I think if we can create, and Nielsen has been the bottleneck for this. It's been an outdated system. It's been a tired system. It doesn't work for online content. It doesn't work for time shifted content. I think if we can erase that barrier, the networks may survive this century, and that would be something.
Sarah, do you think this is going to change this whole horrible window system that's going on right now? Because I think it's silly that, oh, wow, New Girl came out yesterday. I have to wait till the morning to watch it because it might run at a certain time and somebody has to.
Is that your favorite show?
I just watched this morning.
Okay. It's really good.
I enjoy it.
Funny show.
Yeah. It's funny.
It's not my favorite show.
Well, okay.
Anyway, window.
Yeah. No, I think it'll be interesting to see the advertising side of this. You've got your traditional advertising. You got, you know, little 2-minute, 30-second breaks. You see some commercials. You come back to the show, and that's fine and good. If I'm watching on my iPad, let's say, and the episode has become available on iTunes, well, that's a different thing. We're not seeing the same kinds of ads delivered to me. So it'll be interesting for me to see how these Nielsen ratings change once they are, like Russ said, including time-shifted content, because just so many of us are watching content that way. But also how the advertisers will be able to capitalize on what I assume will be just bigger numbers overall.
Gosh, I'm really hoping that this saves a lot of quality shows that were killed. I mean,
right?
Arrested Development did really well in like DVD sales, and did like same thing with Family Guy that came back on the air. If this kind of stuff actually happened, where Nielsen was taking the ratings from online versions of the shows and just future watchings of it, that could change a lot of things. Maybe we'll get quality television programs.
Bring back Twin Peaks.
Oh, come on. We actually have the highest quality television programs that the television industry has ever created.
I only mentioned that because somebody in the chat room said Bachelor's coming back. And so that just put me in a
right. But
awful
I mean,
mood.
We've always had crappy television programs, but that doesn't, you know, I don't think this is going to mean the elimination of crappy television programs.
I just hope it means the continued success of really good shows. How about that?
Firefly, things that are cut down in their prime. Right. Yeah.
You have an environment right now where on the networks, shows are getting canceled for numbers that on cable networks are considered a success. I think that needs to change.
Well, and when the DVR first became popular, the television networks resisted it. They actually, remember, they used to try to schedule the beginning and end times to screw you over if you had a DVR. Mm-hmm. And what happened was Nielsen came in and said, okay, we're going to do a plus 3-day rating, a plus 1-day rating, and a plus 7-day rating. And that kind of dissipated that big fight. So hopefully this will do the same for online viewing. Because like I say, as eyeball should be an eyeball. If I'm watching The New Girl, I should be getting counted as a person who's watching The New Girl, no matter when I watch it or how I watch it. It doesn't make any sense.
I think it's just New Girl without the article in front of it.
Well, you kids with your comedy Zooey Deschanel shows.
She's adorkable.
She's adorkable.
Adorkable.
Let's finish up with the randomizer.
Randomizer.
This is something from my day. Actually, Smithsonian, they have a great feature blog called Paleo Future, where they dig up old things that look into the future. And they found some old Samsung ads that show, one of them that shows a robot being Vanna White on a game show. And it, the caption is longest running game show, 2012 AD. And then what it flips to is a Samsung VCR that says, this is the VCR you'll record it on. the VCR you'll tape it on, 2012 AD. We're not using Samsung VCRs. Just, you know, they got that part wrong. But these are some pretty funny looks. You know, steak revealed to be health food, 2010. And
yeah,
the presidential candidate that smokes, 2008 AD.
You know, Vanna White sued Samsung over this, right? Because this was like, they were saying that
back in the 80s,
yeah,
she did?
This is actually, we were taught this in school. This is actually somewhere in 91 that she sued.
Oh, 91, because, okay.
Yeah, she sued because that was her likeness, and Samsung saying, no, it's not you. And there was a whole thing back and forth. I forgot how it actually worked out, but it's on Wikipedia. But the fact that Samsung did become, I mean, they were kind of a joke back then. The fact that they are like the number one television company at this point was a huge turnaround for that company. Because you should be like, oh, yeah, you got a Samsung. That's like having an LG microwave, a lucky gold star. And now they're both pretty major now.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is cool. I always love these retro things. Let's see what's going to happen in the future, though. What's on the calendar,
Well,
Sarah?
It's going to happen in the future on this day, as it has for the last 20-something-odd years. But we have a birthday to celebrate. Happy birthday to Zelda. The Legend of Zelda was born on this day in Japan in 1986. The stork brought it.
And next year, it'll have a birthday again. So that's the future.
That's correct. Yeah. Go. So the future will happen forever. Wow.
Happy birthday, Zelda.
Yeah.
Big fan of the design. Let's see what's incoming.
Incoming message.
We got a message from Ed. He says, Google's marketing strategy for glass is an example of how Elon Musk should have been getting good PR for Tesla. Instead of allowing bad or mediocre reviews from unintended users or those with an axe to grind, Google is positioning their product into the hands of those most likely to give passionately good reviews, even in the face of technological shortcomings. Google has the power to control their message from start to finish, and we should expect no less. I love my authoritarian machine
Authoritarian machine overload is my Flock of Seagulls cover, man.
We got another email from Brian in Fort Worth, Texas, who says, I think the discussion about Spotify streaming versus online album sales and the music industry strategies misses the real problem for the music industry. The problem is that all of the industry's monetization strategies involve quantity over quality. The increase in vinyl sales may just be a hipster trend, but more and more artists are releasing albums on vinyl and charging significantly more, $20 to $40, for albums that cost $5 on Amazon because the market will bear it. The digital revolution changed the way we think about music. It's now data, not a physical thing. With every step, though, sound quality has dropped. That drop has led average consumers to buy more and more expensive headphones to make these weak files sound better. The market is primed for a revolution in sound quality. People are willing to spend money on music, but not when it's the same quality or worse than I get through streaming services. If the industry had also started mastering those high-res formats better than they have in the past decade with CDs, many casual users would be more than happy to spend more money on quality, just like they do on their phones, their headphones, their tablets, and their cars.
Yeah, I think this is actually, I think Brian is right on this. And in fact, I've talked to not people in the music industry itself, but people around the music industry who say they really think the music industry is just waiting for the right time. They're waiting for the backlash. They're waiting for people to start grumbling about the quality of the music that they're buying. And right now, we've been gorging for 10 years on free and cheap music. But once that high is over, the expectation is we'll swing back towards saying, well, I can get everything easily, but I want it to sound better than this. And that's when the music industry can start charging for higher quality stuff. That is it for this episode of Tech News Today. Thank you, Russ Pitts, for joining us as always. And let folks know where they can find your work online.
You can find my work online at polygon.com. Easy to remember, easy to find.
polygon.com.
G-O-N.com. What's in a game? Well, polygons are in a game. And me, because I write about them. So
did we get a polygon count out of Sony?
Polygon count? No, we didn't get a Polygon count. We got we got mentioned that polygons create the heart or soul or something.
That's right. I knew there was something in there.
Well, silly. Yeah. I think there's a lot of game developers who would see it differently, but it was a nice name drop, so I'm happy about it.
Yeah, very good. Well, thanks, man. Always good to have you on the show. And thank you all for submitting stories in our subreddit. TechNewsToday.reddit.com is where you can make your voice heard on what stories we talk about. I picked that Netflix discussion story because so many of you, over 100 of you, voted it up. So go in there, vote things up, vote things down, submit stories. It helps us put our show together each and every day. You can find us on the web, twit.tv/TNT. You can email us. Our email address is tnt@twit.tv. And give us a call. Leave us a voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW. Last show of the week. Shortened week for us in the U.S. Tomorrow, Friday, Darren Kitchen will join us. We'll see you then.